gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the 3M second quarter earnings conference call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we'll conduct a question and answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Thursday, July 22, 2010. I would now like to turn the call over to Matt Ginter, Vice President of Investor Relations at 3M.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our second quarter business review. For those of you that attended our investor meeting in Kentucky last month, we hope you found it helpful in understanding our company further. Also, as I've mentioned on the past two calls, please mark your calendars for the morning of Tuesday, December 7th, when we'll host our annual Outlook meeting in New York City. Complete details regarding timing and location will be available very soon. Before we begin, take a moment, please, to read the forward-looking statement on slide number 2. During today's conference call, we'll make certain predictive statements that reflect our current views about our future performance and financial results. We base these statements on certain assumptions and expectations of future events that are subject to risks and uncertainties. Item 1A of our most recent Form 10-K lists some of our most important risk factors that could cause actual results to differ from our predictions. So let's begin the review. I'll turn the program over to George, and please turn to slide number 3.
Thank you very much, Matt, and good morning, everybody, and thanks for joining us on our second quarter call. As you've seen, it was another outstanding quarter for us in both revenue and earnings, as we essentially repeated and built upon the success patterns of recent quarters. In fact, sales of $6.7 billion matched our previous all-time quarterly record set in 2008. And coming off the depths of the recent recession, I think this is a remarkable achievement by 3M's people, only one year after such a terrible economic contraction. We once again delivered tremendous organic volume growth, 18% this time, nearly twice the rate of global IPI. While it's difficult to determine accurately the exact sources of growth, a strong economy was certainly a factor, and as we explained last quarter, we continue to take market share and create new markets with a high level of new product vitality. It's opening many old and many new customer doors for us. As we've done throughout the downturn, we continue to invest in and build for the future. In Q2, we took a major step forward, increasing advertising and promotions by nearly 30%, mostly in consumer, and increased R&D spending by 13%. I think this speaks directly to the strength of the 3M model in that we were able to generate very high quality results even as we invest and build for future success. Second quarter record operating income was $1.6 billion, up 34% on last year. But I'm especially pleased with our margin performance at 23.7%, with all businesses achieving 22% or better margins. The corresponding EPS of $1.54 per share is a 38% increase year over year. Now let me take you quickly through the business highlights. Please turn to slide number 4. In our largest business, industrial and transportation, sales were up 23% and leveraging was outstanding, with profits up 66%. Within that segment, our newest division, renewable energy, was up 73% in sales, coming off a 72% increase in the first quarter. FYI, we built a brand new coating line for this business in Singapore last September, which very quickly sold out. So we'll be expanding capacity again in the months to come. Also of note is that our automotive OEM sales were also up nearly 50%. This compares to global auto builds in the mid-20%, and abrasives, our oldest business, was up an impressive 28%. Healthcare sales rose 5% in dollars, or about 6% in local currency terms. H1N1 was about a point drag on healthcare growth. The stars in healthcare were drug delivery systems, which is creating double-digit growth, largely from new products. Dental care sales were up 7% in local currency, and our core skin and wound care business grew at a similar rate. Healthcare profits increased in line with sales, reflecting increased investment levels. Even with those investments, margins were a very spiffy 31%. Display and graphics continued on its impressive growth and profit trajectory with a 30% sales jump and profits up 69%. Optical systems again led the way with a 64% sales increase, driven almost entirely by new products. Our technology is in the sweet spot of need as LCD TVs migrate to LED backlights. Another star was our commercial graphics business. In 2009, it was impacted greatly by the downturn and is now on an upswing, with second quarter sales up 22% year on year and 12% sequentially. This is especially encouraging more generally since, in our experience, commercial graphics is usually a proxy for future business renewal and advertising spend. Consumer and office sales rose 10%, with organic growth accounting for over half the increase. Acquisitions were also a significant driver, with the addition of Ace Bandages in the retail healthcare space and A1 in the Asian retail label market. Consumer and office is another investment story, as we're adding sales and marketing resources, especially internationally, in addition to the AdMerch investments I mentioned earlier. Profits rose 7%, with margins at a healthy 22%. Very good for a consumer business in these unusual times. Safety, Security and Protection Services grew sales 10%. A great result even as H1N1-related respirator sales naturally tapered off as that crisis passed. We estimate that H1N1 added about 18 million sales to the second quarter results. In comparison, a year ago, H1N1 sales totaled 50 million. So the drag on Q2 growth of the total company was about 0.6%. Security Systems posted growth of over 30%, and both industrial mineral products and building and commercial services drove double-digit sales increases. Profits in S&PS rose 9%, and margins were maintained north of 23%. Last, but certainly not least, electro and communications sales rose 32%, while profits rose a whopping 150%, and margins approached 23%. Consumer electronics is the story here, as our businesses serving the electronics market grew over 60%. Using logic chipset sales as a proxy, the industry was up 34%. You might logically ask why we're growing so much faster than the market. The answer again is new products, like our optically clear adhesives, and new market share as, increasingly, 3M components are being specified into a number of leading electronic handheld devices. Growth wasn't limited to electronics, though, as Electrical Markets Division, which is a utility, MRO and construction-oriented division, sales grew by 17% year over year and nearly 10% sequentially. So in summary, it was another terrific quarter with some real eye-popping results. Some observers have said that, as a practical matter, investors are not interested today in anybody's second quarter news or their results, only in what they see as a very uncertain future. We certainly understand and sympathize with the basis of that view. So in that vein, let me try to answer two principal questions for you today. The first is, what are we seeing in economies around the world that might indicate where these markets are headed in the coming quarters? And the second question is, what progress is 3M making toward our goal of more or less doubling our natural organic growth rate? Notionally, I mean a target north of 7% growth if IPI is within its normal historical bounds of 3 to 3.5%. Let's remind ourselves that, with the second quarter now behind us, we've seen the end of arithmetically easier year-on-year growth comparisons. It's now going to get a lot harder for everyone, not just 3M, from here on in. We made that simple observation at the beginning of the year on our fourth quarter 09 conference call, but it seems to have been misunderstood here and there. We were never speaking about the innate growth capability of the company, only a simple exercise in year-over-year arithmetic. So turning to the world economies, the pattern of end market demand we're seeing has remained very positive overall, with some of the things you'd expect to see happening and some interesting positive twists and turns. Asia and Latin America will be no surprise to you in that they remain very strong. Before anybody infers that this was just the law of averages working across several months and many countries, let me give you a little bit of extra data. China, as a proxy for Asia, rose 51% in the quarter and 45% in the month of June, and Korea grew 68% in the quarter. Brazil rose a comparable 50% in the quarter and 42% in June. Europe was quite strong for us also, with local currency growth coming in at 11% for the quarter and 11% in June as well. For context, please remember that the recovery had already begun for us in June of 2009. There was some mild softness in Spain and Greece, with sales flat for the quarter, as you'd expect, but we've seen no signs of contagion in our numbers. A few small Eastern European countries fitted that same pattern, but sales in June showed good recovering trends. FYI, Greece, Spain and Portugal combined make up only 1.5% of our total sales and are therefore not a large factor for us. Emerging markets as a whole showed gains of 38%. You can see now why we have such a focus on our international strategy when you consider that emerging markets now account for fully one-third of all 3M sales. It was a mere 5 years ago that emerging markets comprised only a quarter of our sales, off a significantly smaller base. For the quarter, the big European economies ran in two different speed lanes. Germany was in the Autobahn-style super-fast league at more than 20% local currency growth in the quarter and 27% in June, which more than made up for any slowness elsewhere in Europe. Germany's IPI in the second quarter was estimated to be 9%, so we grew at about 3x the market in Germany. Italy, France and the UK were all in the cruise lane at about 5 to 6%. You can imagine that what happens in these countries from here on in will be highly variable from market to market, affected by a combination of the presence, or lack of, local stimulus, funds, foreign exchange rates, China especially is impacted here, and whether the end markets are local consumer-led or more export-oriented, and what rates they are recovering at. We clearly don't have the time to go over each of them one by one. But export-led manufacturing economies like Germany, Japan, China, Korea and Taiwan all appear to be remaining robust at this time. So overall, we remain cautiously optimistic and think the risk of a secondary economic collapse is small. That said, as stimulus funds run out, we must expect the collective end market demand in those economies to taper off, accentuated by the more challenging arithmetic of year-over-year comparisons. Underlying market growth is slowly increasing in most markets, but perhaps not at the same rate the stimulus funds could dry up, depending on local policy execution. The US is trying to feather in that change to avoid a sharp decline in demand. The outcome is that there will be possibly a period of slower growth beginning in end markets later this year, perhaps late Q3 or early Q4. This isn't a double dip per se, it's just a soft spot and very normal as economic growth takes a breather for a while and adjust to new circumstances such as higher interest rates, lowering stimulus, or commodity inflation. All are very normal in my view. We get one in every recovery. But I think the fact here to note is that companies who innovate well can beat this trap. The unknown factor, and one that's very hard to assess with any precision, is the longer-term impact of debt levels in Europe. If all the nations in Europe address this problem systematically and simultaneously, then growth will inevitably ease. Reports suggest this factor could reduce Eurozone GDP by 1 to 1.5%, but in my experience, cutting social programs are always less successful than their well-intentioned plans. To my mind, as long as the brakes are not put on overly hard, slow economic growth is certainly better than sovereign debt defaults and bodes well for a better future as default risk falls. And as long as we as a company keep innovating and differentiating, this mild slowing is not necessarily negative for 3M. After all, we've shown we can comfortably overcome a small 1% GDP reduction in a few countries. It's relative competitive advantage that counts. I maintain my view that, even if you shake the bottle, the cream always comes back to the top of the milk. In the US, the key to improved long-term growth remains unemployment and investment. Candidly speaking, if the US government wanted to help the situation, it would be finding ways to encourage investment in manufacturing and not adding more entitlement programs. In my view, prosperity is the best way to ensure security for any nation and for any company. US employment is moving forward a bit, even if it's at a stalemate pace. Productivity for us and many other companies is outpacing both inflation and GDP growth. And that means two things. One, margin trends will be good, and two, apart from new technology areas, overall hiring will likely be low. For those companies who have the capability to differentiate, innovate, and thoughtfully invest in new as well as core markets, I think the environment can be pretty good. And in a perverse twist of irony, it offers real competitive advantage to innovators like 3M. This is simply a process of Darwinian economics at work. Turning to 3M's growth capability, we've seen trends for three or four quarters which suggest that we might be close to cracking the growth code, and that perhaps we're close to the tipping point that we've long been in search of. So when will we know this for certain? I feel a little bit like an economist now by saying that, to be definitive, we need more data. Q3 and Q4 are going to be very important in the quest, as the world economy cools a bit and any inventory transients, to the extent that they ever existed, die down. It's at this point that the share and market creation data will become much clearer. But tipping point or not, all in all, we seem to be making meaningful progress toward our long-term growth objective. I think this is completely logical to believe that as our MPVI number goes up, we should expect it to translate into more growth, either through market creation or share gain. If it doesn't, then why bother? What is unknown and probably unknowable is whether the share gains we've made are sustainable or just a one-time function of the economic recovery. The other important factor is the improving implicit quality of the products under the umbrella of that MPVI number. With more platform products being released than ever and a greater percentage of longer-lived products. The overall trend is very positive, and we plan to show you more of the data behind it at our annual update in December. To summarize, our macroeconomic views have played out more or less as we expected, confirming that our plan was and still is the right plan. To speak candidly, we believe we can deliver superior performance whatever economic scenario unfolds, good or bad, and we're not afraid of it. We have clearly demonstrated our ability to generate growth and leverage earnings while always keeping our eyes and investments on the longer-term prize of much higher growth. What's clear is that we have tremendous momentum in our favour, with 18% organic volume growth in Q2, which was well in excess of market growth. For three quarters in a row now, we have generated net growth of about 8 to 9% above the market. We all know how fickle these things can be, but this is clearly much more than a one-quarter flash-in-the-pan adjustment. In fact, we've outpaced economic growth by a large margin for nearly a year. If we can do this again in the next couple of quarters, I think we should all conclude the growth point has been proven. I can't, however, promise you a monotonically increasing pattern. The road to growth often has a few bumps on it. We also have to closely watch demand and have the confidence to invest in capacity just a little bit ahead of it. Otherwise, we'll stifle growth as capacity, not demand, becomes the new choke point. 3M's people have proven we can simultaneously do acquisitions, invest heavily in the long term, drive R&D productivity, and service low parts of the pyramid without margin collapse. If the growth point gets proven in this next couple of quarters, then if I were in your shoes, I'd soon be asking the next question, how much more money can you put to work and repeat the trick? So with that, let me address our outlook for the year. Please turn to chart number 5. With a strong second quarter behind us and great forward momentum, we're raising our full year 2010 expectations for the third consecutive quarter. We now believe that organic sales volumes will come in between 13 and 15% for the year versus a prior forecast of 10 to 12%. We also expect that earnings per share will fall somewhere within the band of $5.65 and $5.80 on an adjusted basis versus a prior expectation of $5.40 to $5.60. We anticipate that operating margins will be above 22.5% for the year, half a point higher than our previously expected numbers. Our tax rate and share count estimates are unchanged versus last quarter. I hope this kind of colour helps you, and I'll now turn over the call to Pat, who will explain our second quarter results in more detail.
Thanks, George, and good morning, everyone. Please turn to slide number 6. On a year-over-year basis, sales rose 18% in the second quarter to $6.7 billion, and importantly, equaled the previous peak sales level from the second quarter of 2008. Growth was led by Asia-Pacific at 42% and Latin America at 23%. We saw tremendous growth in some sales to some of our large and important business and industries, including 61% in electronics and 49% in automotive OEM. As George mentioned, we grew much faster than the underlying market in both of these cases. As in the first quarter, organic volumes drove up our results in the second. Organic volumes rose 18% worldwide, with increases of 38% in Asia-Pacific, 22% in Latin America, 11% in Europe, and 9% in the United States. Acquisitions added 70 basis points to growth versus the second quarter of 2009, primarily attributable to the recent purchases of Ace Products, home of one of the great consumer healthcare brands, and A1 Labels, the second largest retail and office label producer in the world. Both of these transactions are on track to deliver in 2010 and well beyond. Selling prices declined 60 basis points in the quarter, about in line with our plan entering the year. The decline was largely due to normal price down trends within our electronics businesses. Gross profit grew 20% year on year, and gross margins rose just over a point to 49%. Strong volume growth certainly boosted gross margins, and factory utilization rates were very good in the quarter. We also experienced carryover benefits from restructuring actions undertaken in 2009. These gains more than offset some modest pricing headwinds, both in terms of selling prices, which declines 60 basis points, and raw materials, which increased just over 3% year on year on a gross basis. We fully anticipated this in our plan for the year. Looking ahead, we expect raw materials to be a slight headwind again in the third quarter, but costs are likely to flatten out in the fourth. Finally, we saw significant improvements in yield, waste, speed, and productivity, driven heavily by 3M's many Lean Six Sigma teams around the globe. SG&A costs increased 9%, which included a 15% increase in sales and marketing investments. We continue to invest in advertising and promotion, which is up nearly 30% on a year-on-year basis, as well as sales reps and new marketing talent, particularly in high-growth developing economies. R&D investments rose $41 million, or 13%, to $350 million for the quarter. And once again, general and administration costs remained under very good cost control. Operating income rose 34% to $1.6 billion, a record for any second quarter in 3M's history. And margins surged nearly 3 points to 23.7%. The second quarter tax rate was 26.6%, down about 4 points on a year-on-year basis, due to a lower international tax rate, along with the resolution of a number of U.S. federal tax audits. We continue to expect full-year tax rate to be about 28% or lower, which would imply a 29% rate in the back half of the year, with the third quarter slightly higher than the fourth. On a GAAP-reported basis, we generated record second-quarter earnings of $1.54 per share, up 38% year-on-year. Please turn to slide 7 for a look at our sequential P&L results. Sales rose 6% sequentially, despite approximately 2% points of currency pressure. So, in fact, underlying volumes rose nicely versus the first quarter. Sequential growth was broad-based, as 5 of our 6 businesses posted improvements, and the other, namely healthcare, generated sales that were about the same level as Q1. So the company overall continues to improve and expand quarter by quarter. At a sub-segment level, there were many sequential sales highlights, but I'll hit just a few of them. Optical Films posted impressive quarter-on-quarter growth of nearly 30% as customer production levels rose in anticipation of a good year of sales for LCD TVs and other electronic devices. Other notable increases include traffic safety systems, industrial tapes and adhesives, and automotive aftermarket solutions. Our retail DIY business also posted very impressive sequential sales gains, boosted by a continuous flow of great new products such as the new generation Scotch Blue Painter's Tape and Filtrete Home Furnace Filters. Gross profit increased in line with sales, and gross margins were a solid 49%. Factory throughput in the second quarter was similar to Q1 levels, and raw materials nudged slightly higher on a sequential basis, but we managed to match Q1's gross margin percent regardless. Gross profit was boosted by ongoing productivity efforts, which continue to play a critical role in our future strategy. Future growth investments demands continuous improvement throughout our businesses. SG&A and R&D investments both rose 2% sequentially. Recall that stock option expense is highest in the first quarter, commensurate with when we grant options to our employees. Adjusting for this, SG&A and R&D both increased over 5% on a sequential basis. Operating income increased 10% versus Q1, and incremental profits rose 40%. Operating margins were up nearly a full point versus the first quarter to 23.7%. Net income and earnings per share increased 20% and 19% respectively. Now let's turn to the balance sheet and cash flow. Please turn to slide number 8. Free cash flow for the first 6 months of 2010 was $1.9 billion, a year-on-year increase of over 10%, and we converted 92% of net income to free cash flow over the period. Slightly lower capital expenditures accounted for most of the difference. We anticipate that capital investments will begin to accelerate in the second half of 2010 as a number of our key product lines are at or near full capacity. We expect to invest approximately $1 billion on CapEx in 2010, and early forecasts indicate that 2011 could be up 25 to 30%. These additional investments are mostly for growth-related investments. For the full year 2010, we are forecasting that free cash flow conversion will be right around 100%. Acquisition activity was light in the first half of the year, but we expect to increase our acquisition activity in the second half with a number of good opportunities in the hopper. Net working capital turns were 5.4 at quarter end, an improvement versus 5.3 last quarter and 4.8 1 year ago. Accounts receivable turns were 7.2 versus 6.6 1 year ago, as receivable balances are up only 8% year on year versus an 18% sales increase. So receivables are in very good shape. Inventories rose 15% year on year, again less than the rate of sales growth, and turns were 4.4 in June versus 4.3 1 year ago. We certainly are not satisfied at these inventory levels, but considering the rapid ramp up in demand over the past 2 quarters, along with tight supply and some raw materials, it was good to see continued forward progress in our turns. Overall, our working capital is in good shape and we're well positioned for future growth. Cash returned to shareholders totaled $748 million in the second quarter, roughly double the amount paid in both the first quarter of 2010 and the second quarter of 2009. We resumed share repurchases in Q2 after a few quarters without, and we expect to continue buying additional shares during the remaining of the year. To quickly summarize, the second quarter was another very good one for 3M. We drove strong growth and outstanding bottom line leverage, even with significant investments to continue driving higher future growth. We raised our earnings guidance from a previous level of 540 to 560 to 565 to 580 per share. And we expect that organic sales volume growth will be in the range of 13 to 15% for the whole year, 3 points higher than our previous expectation. Operating margins should be north of 22.5% for the year, and we're anticipating a tax rate at or below 28%. Assuming no change, of course, to current tax laws. Finally, our balance sheet is in great shape and puts us in a strong position given uncertainty about the shape of the recovery. Regardless of how the economy shakes out, we'll remain focused on outrunning our competitors and delivering superior financial results. That concludes the formal portion of today's conference call, so let's begin the Q&A.
One moment, please, while the Q&A roster.
question of Scott Davis from Morgan Stanley. Please proceed.
Thanks. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Scott.
I mean, across the board, things were obviously very, very strong, I think, with the exception of healthcare, which is kind of, which I suppose is somewhat tougher comps because that business was pretty strong last year. I mean, I guess my question is kind of, what are you seeing in that business? Because it was a little slow at Danaher as well. Is there across the board some destocking going on in dental? Is it just a function of kind of tougher comps? Just a little bit more color, I guess, is what I'm asking.
I guess let me take it, and George can add on. Actually, you know, they performed at basically their historical growth rate, you know, give or take a point. You do have to recall that they did have some favorable impact of H1N1 in the second quarter last year, Scott, probably to the tune of a point and a half of sales that didn't, you know, repeat here in the second quarter. But, you know, we feel very, very positive about, you know, the progress of that business. And a lot of it is, you know, they did not fall off, you know, as much nearly as, you know, many of the other businesses. Our oral care business, as George said, was up, you know, 7%. So we had very good results there. So we really have no concerns within our healthcare business relative to the growth.
The two businesses that we saw that kind of maintained, I mean, they compressed a little bit, Scott, but maintained kind of normal performance was the consumer office business and healthcare. And you're just really seeing sort of small dips from them last year, and comparable smaller growth this year. So it's really an arithmetic issue. It just measures the stability in those businesses rather than anything to worry about.
Okay, that's what I figured, but thought I'd ask. The other thing, price down 0.6%, I think that's first quarter we've seen kind of price turn negative. I know obviously you've got some, the display and graphics is always kind of a negative price curve, but what, Is there any other kind of reason why prices came down? Because, I mean, most of your main commodities, I believe, in the first half of the year were probably a little bit higher.
There's no particular reason, Scott. As you point out, the electronics is the fundamental, the structural piece of the price down. I think it's fair to say that, you know, if you're to ask the question, did we give up some price to maintain, you know, volume and so forth? You know, when you look at our volume levels, I think it'd be fair to say that there's probably some price, okay, that we're, you know, trading off to get some volume, but that's not a big concern for us. The businesses who have material cost increases are well aware of it, and they manage the relative position of, you know, price to cost very well, as you can see in our, you know, overall margin results.
I think, Scott, there are some pricing opportunities that we might be able to grab now. And also, when you think about the very high mix of electronic-oriented sales, it kind of distorts the net pricing picture. So, again, I don't think there's anything for you to be concerned about, but it looks like there might be a little bit of opportunity here and there.
Okay, and just quickly, I just wanted to get a sense, and I know it's a little early in the year to start talking about pension, but just to try to make sure we get our models right for next year, if you had to mark to market where we're at with discount rates, what do you think, Pat, we'd be for next year?
Well, Scott, let me first of all try to address kind of the broader issue. You know, we have a very, very solid balance sheet, so I don't lie awake at, you know, night worrying about kind of our pension plan from a funded status. You kind of asked a question probably around more of an EPS. And I think it's important that you, as well as investors, kind of make sure that we differentiate between EPS and kind of what the cash flow impact is going to be for a number of us who face a little bit of a headwind situation. But let me just try to, I guess, table set where we're at. Going into the year, we had a carryover amortization issue of probably in the order of about $200 million. So if you use tail end of last year's assumptions, and for our U.S. plan, that would have been an 8.5% ROA and a 5.77% discount rate. That effectively left us in a situation that going into 2011, assuming those results, effectively we had about a $200 million headwind. If you then look forward, and I'm not going to give you a specific number, but I'll give you some sensitivities that you can look at, because obviously we only measure this come year end. It's, you know, one of these things where you only measure at one point in time during the year. But for every 25 basis point change in the discount rate, it impacts our earnings, or I should say our pre-tax, by about $28 million. And every point of return on assets is about $6 million. So hopefully that kind of helps you, you know, from a modeling standpoint, you can look at kind of your own set of assumptions. It's of course here, you know, at the end of the second quarter, we're in an environment where discount rates had really, you know, come down very, very significantly. I would not look at that as a realistic point from a funding perspective, because I think most of us would probably believe that interest rates are going to have to ratchet up in the future. It's just a matter of when we start to see that happen. And I think we're all hoping, of course, that, you know, the equity markets have a little more of a, you know, back half rally to it. I think we'd all like to see that.
I agree with that. Okay, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Scott.
Our next question comes from the line of Steven Winoker from Sanford Bernstein. Please proceed with your question.
Good morning.
Good morning.
First question around, again, you talked a lot about, again, breaking out that top-line core volume growth and talked about what is implied in sort of what must be share gains and from new product introductions, et cetera. But how are you still seeing that restocking part of it playing out? I mean, as you now reflect back on the quarter, what's your sense in sort of total restocking? I know you just talked about dental a little bit, but just total restocking across the business.
Well, Steve, it's really not that high, to be frank with you. You know, we poll our people here, and they really say there's just not a lot. In fact, if you look at the Census Bureau data, it shows that there's a little bit maybe more destocking than there is restocking net. So I don't think that's a big factor. You know, we tried to calculate what the impact was in the first quarter, because we had those some monster numbers, and we cranked in 3 into the number. It might have been a little high. So I don't think it's a big factor at all, Steve. You know, maybe it's 1% if you want to sort of put a number on the total this quarter. Certainly not more than 2. It's certainly less than last quarter. So I don't think that's what's driving it, Steve. It seems to be when you look at the market growth and you subtract all of the other things you know, you're left with this sort of 8 or 9% of growth that you can only attribute to either share gain or new market creation. And that's been the pattern that's existed for 3 or 4 quarters now. And of course, you can well understand we intend to try to do our level best to repeat it. So it does seem that the new product growth model seems to be working, Steve. And I don't think that it's a big piece of this is being driven by restocking. Remember, a lot of the channels that we have no stocking. Automotive has no stocking points. Electronics has no stocking points. So it's not, you know, we don't really send a lot through channels that do. So I don't think it's a big deal, Steve.
So for the second half of the year, as you look to that organic growth number that you've described, is again, that's still dependent mostly on new product introductions and market share gains. That's fair versus the cyclical rebound. Is that fair to say? Or?
Yeah, Steve, I would say that we're not anticipating that, I'll call it the restocking side, okay, is the reason for the back half growth. It really is our fundamental performance in the back half of the year. You know, I guess just to add to George's comment, as he says, you know, there's always, it's a little bit of a tricky question, okay, on restocking, because when you're selling to OEMs in electronics and auto and the like, is we don't think there's restocking going on, of course, until the point in time that obviously they overbuild, okay, and then at some point in time they may have excess inventory and they have to, you know, adjust production schedules down. But it's very interesting that a lot of supply chains across the globe are very, very tight today just to meet existing schedules. So I don't think there's been a lot of room for people necessarily to build a lot more inventory back in the system. Plus, you know, let's face it, coming out of the recession, people are just, you know, more and more cautious about kind of a little bit of last minute ordering still. and, you know, waiting till and actually trying to tighten up the supply chains even more and pushing, you know, some of that back into the suppliers.
Steve, there's another phenomenon that we've heard about, and that is in the electronics area. That is some double ordering because the supply chains are so tight, so lean, and some customers are worried about being able to get products. We do hear some occasional tales of double ordering, and of course, in the end, it's he who has the service quality, he who has the inventory, that's going to get that business. So you've got some kind of race conditions exist in some of the businesses. I'm with Pat. I think it's not a big factor as we see it at the moment.
Hey, could you maybe expand on the sort of incremental margins in consumer and office and in safety over the last quarter? Just struck me on the incremental side a bit low, but just peeling that apart a little bit.
Well, yeah, in both of those businesses, you just have to be a little cautious, Steve, because of the sell-in to distribution and when we promote products. Generally speaking, in the first quarter, in consumer specifically, we don't spend a lot of money in average sales and promotion, but that starts to kick up here in Q2 and then through the rest of the year. You know, if you look at those margins of that business, though, you just kind of, I still think, that we're leading margins in about any consumer business. So I look at that business really more from a standpoint of, are we investing in enough in it and really helping the retailers, sell through the products that we have. So I think it's more of a timing of expense issue than it really is any kind of an incremental, So if you look at it over a trend basis, Steve, on kind of an annual basis or a longer term basis, they should have, similar, incremental margins, but you just have to be a little cautious on a quarter by quarter basis.
Only one last piece of color, Steve. We did decide to fund some projects on more advertising and merchandising and feet on the street in some of these emerging markets. That just seemed wonderful opportunities to us. So we did make some of that spending this quarter. So again, I think you should see, as long as you understand the reasons for behind the question or behind the data, you'll feel more reassured, because actually the positive, we were investing in growth, not suffering some sort of price compression or difficulties in the business. It was completely the opposite.
Okay, let me hand it off now, but thanks.
Thanks
a lot, Steve.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone keypad. And our next question comes from the line of Jeff Sprague from Vertical Research Partners. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Jeff.
Hey, George, back to your kind of maybe closing thought before you toss it to Pat on, if you have cracked the code, how do you deploy capital to further capitalize on it? Obviously, R&D is lagging sales, not really from a lack of wanting to spend R&D, but the sales are just so darn strong.
Yeah.
But I wonder if you look at the balance between R&D and capital, how you think things play out going forward. I think you've done a lot of work, untangling the hairball, as you used to call it, but you do have a lot of new products in the pipeline. Is the growth challenge there actually just getting the capital in place to deliver them, or do you actually feel like you need to continue to really prime that pump more to drive the top line?
I think it's a great question, Steve, Jeff, I really do. We talk about this, if you look at that roughly 30 or 31% MPVI number where we're at right now, and we really haven't, loaded a lot more people into the system. It's a similar number to what existed when it was down in the low 20s of the late teens. So we clearly we've driven some real good productivity in our R&D. Now you say to yourself the question, how much more can we get out of productivity and how much do we need to put in real money on spend? You have to think of a couple of things there. One is the basic kind of administration burden in R&D. Secondly, as Pat makes the point, we've still got loads and loads of growth opportunities in emerging markets, which are generally less expensive. So my kind of feeling on the R&D spend is, yeah, probably has to go up a little bit if we're going to continue to accelerate that 30-31 number up to 40, which is what really is our goal. But on the capital, I think the kind of growth rates we've been seeing in some of these businesses, in optically clear adhesives, in optical films, in abrasives, in the renewable energy, in those areas. I mean, we have really just loaded those factories up, and I think I only said it on the call because I think it's a reminder to ourselves as well as to investors that there is another piece of this puzzle that we have to have capacity to do it. So I think right now we seem to have got the R&D net. I think we've got the R&D thing running pretty well, Jeff. And here and there, we're just going to have to pay increasing amounts of attention to investment in those big businesses. We have talked to investors about increasing the capital spend for the year, probably taking it up by maybe another $100 million, maybe it'll turn out to be 120, but something of that order, in response to the question really that you're asking. I think we're okay for now. I think we have the people to execute it, Jeff. But if you continue to get these kind of growth rates for a long time, clearly we're going to have to put some more people in here and get some more infrastructure to execute it to make sure it's all kept in balance.
All right, well, that's a high-class problem.
It's a really high-class problem to have.
Yeah, exactly. And then I'm just wondering, to get in the weeds a little bit on consumer, the organic growth was a touch lower than I was guessing. Was there any channel fill from kind of the label initiative, or is that kind of more of a back half dynamic? Did that have any impact on the quarter at all?
Yeah, Jeff, first of all, on the specific on your question on label initiative, very, very small here in the second quarter. That's going to take a couple quarters to kind of gain some volume traction here. The other thing, I guess, and maybe I should have brought this up with Steve, is last year, if you recall, during the kind of the recession period, the retailers were really struggling getting floor traffic. So they actually tried to pull some of their back-to-school into the second quarter. So one of the things that we did see is fewer back-to-school sales in the second quarter, which we'll see now into the third quarter. So that's purely a timing issue.
Actually, I recall that now. And then just finally on commercial graphics, you're not the first company this earnings season to start to hint that maybe some of these commercial markets are looking better. I wonder there if you can parse apart just kind of underlying demand versus your own new product momentum in that market. You see a genuine turn in demand, or do you think it's new products and penetration there?
It's hard to know exactly, Jeff, where it's coming from. If you look at the reports, you say that some of those markets are still pretty moribund. But I think the sales into distribution are into distribution there, Jeff, for the most part. Utility sales, commercial construction sales, those sorts of things, which you see in our electrical market division. I actually just briefly mentioned that in my remarks. We had 17% growth. So I think it's way too early, Jeff, to be suggesting there's some kind of resurgence there. I'm hard pressed to believe that. So I think it's us getting this through new products and maybe here and there, maybe there's a little bit of restocking. If there's any restocking anywhere, that's the place in these distribution channels. It's where you'd expect it, Jeff. So I don't want to be forecasting any kind of resurgence in that market. I think it's way too early at this moment. But it does seem that our new product formula is working to the extent there's activity in that market.
And a lot like the rest of our businesses, the growth rate outside of the U.S. was much higher in that business than it was inside the U.S., even though we did see some recovery back in the U.S. as well.
Hey, thank you, guys.
Thanks, Jeff.
Our next question comes from the line of Terry Darling from Goldman Sachs. Please proceed with your question.
Thanks. Good morning.
Good morning, Terry.
Yeah, gentlemen, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the incremental margins in the second half of the year implied in guidance. It looks to me, if you kind of scope the high end of the low end of the range, you're more in the mid-20s. You were kind of 39% in the first half. And we talk about price costs getting less negative in the back half as you trend through it. Presumably, you're stepping up some investments in that context. But I wonder if you could just talk a little bit more about the elements that are driving that lower incremental in the back half, and kind of what level of conservativeness you think you might be building in there.
Shame on you, Terry, for thinking we're building conservatism in.
Safe assumption here for about a year. Right?
factual to kind of talk about here. One is the we are stepping up our investments in the back half of the year around growth activities. Those programs take a while to gain, all the traction need be. The FX markets, we think, vis-a-vis the first half, will be a little bit more unfavorable the way they're kind of, playing out here, based upon the assumptions that we had at the end of the quarter. Now, the euro's kind of bounced back here a little bit. But the way we do our forecast is really kind of more off of a quarter-ending rate. So, FX is a little bit unfavorable. And I think you're looking at it from OI leverage, not an EPS leverage, because the other thing you see on the EPS side, of course, is our tax rate is higher at the back half of the year. But I think you're focusing more on the operating income leverage.
Yeah, just the operating income, yeah.
So those would be kind of the factors that I see. And then the other question always becomes, what happens to the fourth quarter? I feel reasonably good about, third quarter volume levels. Fourth quarter is always kind of a question as to what happens come December around, plant utilization and the like.
Okay, and then you didn't get all the way into negative territory on net debt to cap, but you got pretty close. You did step up the buyback a little bit, but presumably that's just in the context of offsetting the options. Can you just give us an update with regards to where you are and getting a little more aggressive with the balance sheet?
Well, on the repurchase, it was not just a anti-dilution. It really was our view as to there was some good buying opportunities in the second quarter. And that will still be our mantra, is that if we see good opportunities in the market, we will continue to pursue them. But I must also say on the other side is that George and I feel a lot better about our acquisition pipeline, as it's materializing here in the second half of the year. So we'll have to kind of balance, all those factors out. We all know that, reinvesting back in this business is the right thing to do. So that's going to be our first and foremost priority.
I mean, if you think about how many acquisitions we've done and all the rebuilding we've done, we still managed to maintain good growth rates and great returns, great margins. It's really why I posed that question. I posed it for ourselves before anybody posed it for us, because I knew it was going to go down that pathway. And as Pat said, we have a number of quite exciting acquisitions which are close to maturity that we hope to get completed in the second half of the year. And I think you'll be quite impressed with some of them, some nice technology areas that we're trying to get closed. So I think you'll see this concern disappear or certainly wane as the year goes on.
And we'll look forward to seeing those.
Yeah, and Terry, also just want to remind you back to Scott's question. Companies like us who have a pension legacy issue, part of the reason we do keep a very strong balance sheet is to be able to adjust to, I'll call it shocks in the system. So feel very good about our flexibility there.
Okay, then just lastly, George, wonder if you talk about, the 25% increase in CapEx in 2011. Presumably, the biggest increments go to where the growth has been highest. But any other color you can put on those initiatives for us? It's a pretty big increase, and obviously you wouldn't be making those if you didn't see a good opportunity to continue to grow the business. But maybe you can put some more color there for us.
No, it's a good question, Terry. There are a lot of places which are getting a little bit tight on capacity. In particular, it's the renewables energy area. We need more capacity there. We need more capacity in some of these very, very exotic shaped abrasive grain areas. We need some more capacity in optically clear adhesives. You know, the demand for display technology with the kind of things that we make for them is just enormous. So they are the areas, but they're not the only areas. We're seeing, you know, we're seeing good growth in general industrial tape usage. I suppose at some stage we will eventually see some other markets like construction come back. But as you quite rightly point out, Terry, it's focused on those areas where we see the greatest growth. And even in our optical films business, it's quite remarkable that the guys in optical have done just an absolutely magnificent job of reinventing that business, driving out just utterly massive costs. I mean, you know, eye-popping costs out of it, and increasing productivity per square meter by almost 300%. It's just really quite remarkable what they've done. And it looks like, now, you know, you know how that business can be, but it looks like that business is set for the next, you know, year and a half, pretty nicely, maybe even a little longer. And we're probably going to need some more capacity, either to alter some of our capacity, modify some of our capacity that's dedicated to other places, you know, perhaps lower priority, or put some new capacity in there. So that's where the demand is going to be, Terry.
George, just to follow up on that point on optical, because it's interesting. I mean, with that much cost out, do you see that business? I mean, obviously, there's still going to be cycles there, but do you see that the volatility of the margin through the cycle as less dramatic? I mean, through that cost out process, have you reduced the, you know, the fixed cost mix in that context, or how should we think about that?
Yes, we have. I think you know, you should ask yourself the question, Terry. We ask it ourselves: is what is the asymptote? You know, the price on these electronics, it comes down and down and down and down. Of course, the ultimate goal of any large consumer electronics company making TVs is to have an empty box on the wall that costs nothing, that does everything, and that's their ultimate goal. But you know, if you just look at where the asymptotes likely lie, look at the cost of materials, weigh them. Look at the cost of the bill of material, multiply it by, you know, some small return, and you can make some estimates of where that asymptote's going. If I was making an educated guess right now, Terry, I think the bottom of this cost reduction cycle for TVs comes within the next 3 years, and so I think if we continue to win that battle, so the asymptote gets there, I think the pricing pressure goes away. You reap the rewards of all the cost reductions and efficiencies that you've got. And what classically happens when you get to the bottom of these kind of cycles, Terry, you see actually reconting. So I think this sort of matures then into a somewhat slower growth, stable margin, good margin, great relationship business that is like many other businesses in 3M that have gone through these kind of transitions. I think that's the corner of that journey is somewhere close to 3 years away. So as long as we can keep on winning for around that time, Terry, we're going to be in great shape.
Very interesting. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
As a reminder, please limit your participation to one question and one follow-up. Our next question comes from the line of Bob Cornell of Barclays Capital. Please proceed with your question.
Yeah, you guys got good job explaining what's going on. Just a couple of mop-up questions. You know, the analyst day, you mentioned, George, that you know, of the incremental growth spending, a third of that would occur in the second quarter. Did it actually happen, or it sounds to me like you might have pushed some of the growth spending out of the second half?
Yeah, I'd say, to answer for George there, I'd say that, you know, realistically, with the projects we've got, it takes a while to get, you know, the people hired and in place and executing. So I'd say probably, Bob, it's probably moved a little bit, you know, more towards the back half of the year from where we, you know, obviously have penciled on paper.
Yeah, final question for me. I mean, the corporate expense, and unlike how allocated, was, again, an $80 million number, looks like, I mean, which is more, you know, in line with the first quarter, but way more than I'd modeled. I mean, what's going on there? What's the outlook for that, you know, line item for the year?
Well, Bob, you know, what's in there year on year specifically is, I'll call it the finance-related losses on our pension plan. And I think we've modeled that about $30 million a quarter, I believe, is kind of the year on year. impact.
Right.
Some of the other things that are rolling through there are, as our earnings go up, we do have higher, I'll call it variable comp, okay, around, you know, bonus payouts and so forth, and that flows through there as well.
So how would you guide that for the balance of the year then? About $80 million a quarter?
I would say that that or slightly less than that, Bob, would probably be, my thinking.
Okay. Thanks. Great quarter, you guys.
Thanks, Bob.
Very kind. Thank you.
Yep.
Our next question comes to the line of Stephen Tusa from J.P. Morgan. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning.
Morning, Steve.
Can you just talk about what the third quarter organic growth target is, just so we get an idea of, this kind of a real-time economy, no real restocking, destocking, just curious as to what, you're seeing in the near term.
Hey, Steve, I don't think we gave a third quarter guidance number, but good try. But, if you think about, if you extrapolate the 13 to 15 and you take what we did in the first, the first half, it kind of gives you a back half number. If you just do the math, it's 8 to 12%. And you look at the comps. Okay, the comps are more difficult in the fourth quarter than the third quarter. So I think it's fair to say that the third quarter should be better than the fourth quarter from a reported reported perspective. So that comp
gets about 10 points tougher in the from the third to the fourth, from negative five to positive six.
Yeah, but I don't know if it's going to translate directly to that. I guess the other way I'd look at it is, as I look at Q3 to Q2, is another way to think of it. I think Q3 will be a lot like Q2 from a an absolute revenue perspective, is maybe the other
okay.
way to kind of look at it, Steve.
Okay, gotcha. And then just on D&G, I know you guys have talked about that margin going back to around 20%, but I guess you're saying it's now more stable at a higher level. Are you now coming off that kind of 20% target for D&G now?
Well, it's stable within our window of visibility, okay? What we've always said around that business, Steve, is that, we understand the nature of playing in the, the consumer electronics game. And as long as, George was explaining, as long as we're winning, okay, both on a cost standpoint and a product standpoint, it's a very good business. But you also have to be aware that business can change, rapidly. So we're trying to bracket our thinking in that business around, on the downside, it can be, a 20s, kind of, margin business. But when it performs well, it will do very, very well for us. And we just want to be, fair with everybody to realize that within just kind of the nature of that business is that you can have that, range of outcomes. But, of course, what we're focused on is how do we keep the upside going, realizing, though, that we have experienced and just the nature of the industry is such that at times it can have a tendency to retract. So we're trying to provide a kind of a reasonable bookend for you to think about.
I think what I was meaning,
great,
Steve,
and then one last question.
I'm sorry, I was going to add something if I can, Steve. When yep. I was speaking to Terry, I want to be clear that I meant that the stability would come when the asymptote had been reached. And the pressure on price, there'll always be pressure on price in that industry, but the sort of the 12, minus 12, minus 14 will probably translate to sort of minus 3, that kind of number. And what I really mean is not that there's not the possibility of volatility between now and then, it's just that when that asymptote has been reached, it's much more likely that this is a more stable, a more normal 3M-like business going forward.
Okay, and then just one quick question. You gave a great bridge, I think, last quarter on the sequential increases, whether it's merit pay, investment, and any kind of moving parts going from second to third quarter from a cost perspective that, isn't related to volume that we should be aware of?
No, it's other than Terry did ask the question on incremental margins, when you kind of model it out, it does imply less than we've been running here in Q1 and Q2. And really it is around, two things. You got variability around foreign exchange, and then you do have our new growth investments that is more back half loaded.
which is probably, we probably have 50 to over $50 million more in the probably the last half of the year than we do in the first half of the year.
But they are going to accelerate, Steve. They really are.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from the line of John Roberts from Buckingham Research. Please proceed with your question.
Morning, guys.
Morning.
The strong June volumes that you talked about in Germany and other export-led countries, they were actually up more than the average for the quarter. Is that just because the comps were easier? As they, did they bottom late so they had easier comps in June, or are they actually accelerating up?
I'd have to say they are accelerating. Germany as an economy, okay, has performed very well. Export-related, you know, businesses have performed well. But of course, remember that in the first half of last year, you know, they were impacted. But I think Germany, vis-a-vis the rest of Europe, obviously has outperformed.
And secondly, is back to school ordering and consumer and office back to pre-recession levels? Could you maybe just characterize how that feels relative to maybe a normal environment rather than last year?
Yes, John, it's a great question. I'm not so sure I can answer that. My intuition would say it's not, okay? With unemployment the way it is, and just the sensitivity around consumer spending, I would have a hard time believing that it's, you know, the same level that it was back in, pre-recession period. And remember, in the consumer business, we actually started to see that all the way back into 07, okay? So which is probably more of when the, I'll call it the more, the peak was.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of A.J. Kedriwal from FBR Capital Markets. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you and good morning.
Good morning, A.J.
Just a question on emerging market, nice growth at 38%, and you gave some nice color by country, but wondering if you could provide some comments on how much of that 38% is you know, just underlying growth in those markets versus what you're doing on new products and new channels and all the new initiatives you have in driving growth there.
I don't know the answer off the top of my head, RJ, but I would say it's at least a 2-to-1 ratio, and it may be as much as a 3-to-1 ratio. We'll get Matt to give those numbers back to you afterwards, but it's an excellent multiple. We are doing much, much better in those local markets. You can take that China market number, for example, you know, 50%-ish with growth in their market in the early teens. It's, you know, we're on a 3x or more multiple there. I gave you Germany's obviously not an emerging market, but their IPI for the quarter was around 9. We put in 20 for the month, 27 in June, so you know, between 2 and 3 multiple there, and it's the same in Latin America. So it does seem to be coming from either share gain or new market creation. That's the conclusion you have to reach.
Yeah, Ajay, I'd have a tendency to look at, okay, what was the underlying growth rate of those economies, okay, and say whatever we're kind of doing over and above that is really a combination of kind of penetration gains and new products. Recall what we've said in some meetings is that one of our strategies is to invest heavily in these local technical organizations to develop products that are more closely aligned with local market demands. You start to see that significantly in places like China and Brazil, where we, you know, more and more we got products that are, you know, more attuned to the local market. Then you've also got the dynamic in a place like China where a lot of electronics, okay, is moving to China. So a lot of the new product development that we've got in places like optical and optically clear adhesives also start to flow through into places like China and Taiwan.
Good. So as you look forward, that multiple versus the underlying economic growth in those countries, how do you feel about that? You get some tougher comps, I would imagine some of that multiple gets compressed, but I mean, the 38% looks a really robust number.
I think if Inga Thulin was here, I think Inga would say that his objective for the emerging markets continues to be in that 2.5-3 times, you know, the economy growth, you know, growth rates.
Good. And then on H1N1, there was clearly a headwind for both healthcare and safety in the quarter. Maybe if you can remind us how much of that headwind in the third and the fourth quarters, or was 2Q the big tough comp?
Well,
in each of Q3 and Q4 for the company, the number was about $90 million.
Q3.
All quarters.
So it's the equivalent of about a point and a half of drag on the growth rate for the total company in each of Q3 and Q4, Ajay.
Good, thank you.
And the great majority of that would be in safety, security, and protection.
Good, thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Jason Feldman from UBS. Please proceed with your question.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jason.
So just a little bit of a follow-up on some of the supply chain issues. As volumes ramped up, have you had issues with your own supply chain? And the flip side as well, you know, you've mentioned double ordering in electronics, need to increase capacity. But are there areas where you're really having difficulty keeping up with demand or losing out on business today because of capacity constraints?
Yeah, in some cases, I think that we are. There's some unmet needs, Jason. Here and there, I think that's a fair observation.
Okay. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk about internal investments in R&D, but specifically on the marketing and advertising, consumer and office and elsewhere, should we think of this as kind of a new run rate, or we see kind of continued material increases going forward?
Well, I would say it's a new run rate until we decide that they're all, obviously, if they're paying off, and then we decide if we want to take on, you know, new investments on top of that. So in absolute dollars, you know, we are ramping up our spending, and then you know, thus far we're very confident on our growth projections for those investments. So if they continue to pay off the way we think they will, then obviously we'll take a look to see should we, you know, ramp them up more. Now, if you look at our ratio of sales, if you take a look at, say, SG&A, I do believe that our SG&A costs will continue to get leverage out of SG&A in total as our revenue expands.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Last one.
Our next question comes from the line of Lawrence Alexander from Jefferies & Company. Please proceed with your question.
Good morning. This is Amanda Siglin on for Lawrence. Concerning the consumer electronics end market, is 3M seeing any signs of momentum slowing here? And is that likely because customers are running into capacity limits?
We haven't seen it specifically from our business, and I think part of it's clouded a little bit because of, as George was talking about, double ordering and so forth. The supply chain has been, you know, very, very, I'll put it kind of in a fragile state. I've seen some reports over the last week, okay, where there's been some, you know, belief that maybe there's a little bit of a kind of a slowing and pullback a little bit. But thus far, we haven't seen it on our side from a demand perspective yet.
You know, Amanda, the interesting thing about some of this big growth in electronics recently, it's come from technology changes. It's come from the movement from CCFL backlit LCD TVs to LED TVs driven by brighter pictures, higher refresh rates, and much lower energy usage. So you've seen these driven by consumers making the choice to not only get new technology, but getting it with cost savings associated with it. Certainly all these display, these smartphones, smart display devices, are all driving a lot of demand. New gaming, 3D cameras, 3D televisions, 3D gaming. So I think it's coming from new technology, and it's not necessarily connected directly with kind of consumer sentiment. Now, whether in the end, you know, that will fall off, I suppose, we always would expect it is. But in our business, we haven't seen anything that would cause, it doesn't mean there hasn't been some changes here and there, but nothing that we've seen that would cause us any untoward upset. So far, so good.
Okay, thanks. And just moving to the automotive and related aftermarkets, could you provide any further color on trends you're seeing there and the outlook for the back half?
Well, in the automotive aftermarket, we probably will be more like, you know, kind of the current pace of activity. So that doesn't really change that dramatically. The OEMs, though, you'll get into a comp issue here as you get to the back half of the year. First half had, you know, very, very robust build increases, 25% in the first half auto builds. That will not continue in the back half of the year as kind of the industry went through the correction last year. They started to ramp up production in Q3, Q4 last year. So you're going to start to see smaller increases on a year-over-year basis on the auto side.
Thanks,
Amanda.
That concludes the question and answer portion of our conference call. I will now turn the call back over to 3M for some closing comments.
Well, thank you very much, everybody. Hope you liked the presentations and liked the results. Very much appreciate you spending time with us, listening, and we look forward to talking to you soon. Thanks a lot, guys.